scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things started on this Friday, January 3rd. Another hour is underway on Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on this Friday. It's a Friday, which means it's time for the Eric Francis Hour, as we say hello to Eric Francis right now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Mr. Francis, always a pleasure to have you on board. Always good to dive into all things Flames for an hour. And hey, once again, your columns are provoking response and provoking thought, and that's exactly what a couple of them have done this week. And you know, I want to maybe start with the column that you wrote a little earlier this week about Dan Vladar, about Vladar's future. Of course, Dan got the start Thursday against Utah. Flames lose that game 5-3. There was a lot of controversy. Maybe controversy is the wrong word, but there was a lot of debate online and on social media about going to Dan Vladar in that game instead of going to Dustin Wolf. And these two guys have split right down the middle so far through 38 games this year. But there's a lot of talk about what Dan Vladar's future looks like and where he might be next season as a pending unrestricted free agent. I guess as we dive in, just give us a little bit of a thought on the column, what you were thinking and where you were going with it.
Yeah, it certainly seems to have touched off quite a lot of discussion. Listen, goalies, like you say, have been a hot topic all year long. I mean, it's the number one reason why they're still in a playoff hunt against all odds sort of thing. But, you know, I it's long been my belief that Dan Vladar has really done a great job shielding Dustin Wolf. And what I mean by that is, I mean, I just straight up think he's been given the harder starts. And I think it's been by design. So I decided to delve into the numbers. And I really was I thought they were quite stark in terms of the difference in terms of starts. No, listen, Dustin Wolf has had some tough starts. He's faced off against Florida, Dallas. You know, I could go through the list, and you know, but I wanted to see how many times he played against a team that's in a playoff picture right now versus non-playoff teams, and the difference was significant between the two. I think when I wrote this piece, before the last two games, they both had 18 starts. I think 11 of Vladar's starts were against playoff teams and only 7 of Wolf's. Home starts, 11 starts for Wolf and only 7 for Vladar. And the big one on back-to-backs, the second half of back-to-back, which is a tough task for any team in any league. Vladar started all 4 games. And that what made me write the column was because of that game in Vegas last Sunday. They'd come off a game 19 hours earlier in a different city. They go into Vegas where they only won twice in the history of the Flames franchise. They're playing against the hottest team in the NHL that also has the best home record in the NHL. Like
it was scheduled loss territory, right?
Scheduled loss territory. And of course, who gets tapped to go in and play that game? It's Dan Vladar. And against all odds, he kept it at a 1-0 game until 6 minutes to go. So yeoman's work, but at the end of the day, he pays the price with his stats. And that's kind of the way it's gone all year. Vladar, eye test wise, you can't tell me that he hasn't had a great year. He's been very, very good. He's a big part of why this team is still in a playoff spot. But numbers-wise, like, his numbers are some of the worst amongst, you know, starters in the league. And I know he's not a starter. He's a 1A, 1A, whatever you want to call it. But he's taken a beating in terms of the numbers. Some of that is, you know, on him, I guess, but a lot of it's because of who he's had to play. Meanwhile, Dustin Wolf has had you know, some easier starts. And I don't want to, none of this is to take away from what Wolf has done. He's a Calder favorite. He's right there with Celebrini in my books and Hudson, but it couldn't have been done. If you ask me, if they didn't have a guy like Vladar shielding him, like if the duo was Devin Cooley and Dustin Wolf, I think we're having a radically different conversation right now, which is what kind of brought me around on the column, which is, hey, this has worked so well. You know, is it worth exploring keeping him here next year? And there's the debate, right? And a lot of people think that it's ridiculous to think that he should stay next year. A lot of people think he's definitely going to be gone. I do think that the odds are that he will be gone next year as a free agent. But there's so much more to delve into, and we can meander through this. But, you know, I just don't think a lot of people think, well, it's all about asset management, and soon they're going to start playing Wolf more and more, and it would be time to then trade Vladar. Well, A, I'm here to tell you there's not much of a goalie market for anyone, let alone a guy with a 3.2 goals against average and a sub 900 save percentage. But, you know, I think you're going to go the rest of the year. You're going to keep him, and I think you're going to lose him to free agency. But I do think that there's merit to the conversation of keeping him. I really do. I think there's a lot of reasons why I think it makes a ton of sense. I am excited about Devin Cooley. I do want to see him. But I also think that this is a pretty good little recipe they've got going on right now. I want your thought, and we'll delve into it more, but what are your thoughts on the outset in terms of probability of Vladar staying on, and do you think it's rational?
I don't think it's a horrible discussion. Like, I definitely don't dismiss it out of hand. You know, like, for me, I still think that the long term of having Cooley and Wolf as your pairing, I think makes the most sense salary cap wise, makes the most sense just in terms of the potential that Cooley might have. I guess part of it comes down to EF is that I'm not convinced how much more there is to go on Vladar. Like, I'm not convinced that we're now at a point where he's knocking on the door to be a number one. Like, I wonder if we're starting to move into is what he is territory. And as such, you know, and I hate saying this word, but how replaceable in free agency is a guy like Vladar, right? Like, if he were to get dealt, or if he were to move on in free agency elsewhere, could you rather easily find a guy who could step in and take on Vladar's minutes? Like, I look at a guy like Kevin Lankinen in Vancouver. That was a late signing just before training camp, and Lankinen's been huge for the Canucks and a big reason why they've been able to stay in this playoff hunt despite Thatcher Demko's injury. And so what are we talking about now when it comes to Vladar? And maybe you look at it a little bit differently. Maybe you still see him being a potential number one down the road, and that's very fair. For me, I'm not sure if that's going to be the case, and thus I think about it and I say, well, the potential and the untapped part of Devin Cooley's game, it feels like it is a little bit more, and the ceiling might be a little bit higher, and thus I might prioritize him going into next year also on a one-way deal. And I say to myself, maybe the best bet for the Flames, or the thinking would be to have Wolf and Cooley as your NHL tandem. And so I don't know where Vladar fits in that. So I guess that's where I come in on it, but I don't think it's an invalid conversation to have, because you're right. The tandem has worked very well, and I continue to, and I think I'm getting more and more resistance on this from Flames fans, but then that's fine. I think it's a fascinating conversation, but I continue to submit that the tandem is a big reason why Dustin is having the success he's having, and the numbers that you outlined in your column, and the ones that you just said right there, are a big reason for it. So I don't think it's an invalid conversation, because I think these guys work well together, but I still don't know if it's the best future plan for them, if that makes any sense, just because I do think you need to continue to prioritize Wolf as the most important thing, and you've also got this really exciting goaltender in Cooley that his contract will then transfer to a one-year deal next year, and that needs to be taken into account as well.
100%. And the fact that he's the hottest goalie on the planet outside of the NHL, you know, adds even more fuel to the argument that those two need to be the guys next year. And hey, listen to me, you know, I fully believe that that's, you know, odds are that that's going to be the tandem next year. And listen, I think this whole conversation can be done with if you find out Vladar's looking for $4 million a year, or, you know, I don't know what the number is, but I think, you know, I think that the conversation can be had if, you know, because he openly said to me in that piece, you know,
yeah,
I want to stay. I've told Backlund, I've told Conroy, I've told everybody in this room, I want to stay. I love this city. I feel indebted to this team for giving me a chance to play in the NHL, and I want to stay here. The grass isn't necessarily greener for me anywhere else. I love working with Jason LaBarbera and Jordan Sigalet because they've had a big role in the success of both guys this year and the way they've used them. And so it is a great scenario, and you can understand why he'd want to stay here. And he would fully, fully understand that his role would diminish as early as right, like next month. Like, I think the coach alluded to that today when he was talking about, I think that he thinks at some point he's going to kind of let one guy go on a bit of a roll. I doubt anybody thinks that's going to be Vladar. It could be, but I really kind of doubt it. I love that they've gone on merit so far, but I think ultimately, on merit or not, I think everyone recognizes Wolf's been the better of the two and gives you probably the better chance moving forward. So I just, it's great for him to want to stay here, and I really believe him when he says that. And I do think it would be good for him because he probably could secure another 2 years, but he'd have to take a significant pay cut from what I think he can get on the open market. And I'm not saying he'd be one of the most sought after backups in the league, but I think he becomes with a backup with a chance of filling in as a starter if someone ever got hurt. And I do think he can be a starter in the National Hockey League. But I also understand Devin Cooley at $800,000 next year on a one-way deal. You know, but it does mean, just so everyone knows, it means Wolf would then be playing on those second half of back-to-backs. Wolf would be playing in Vegas against the juggernauts of the league. And maybe he's ready for that. He's probably proven enough to me already that he is ready to be that 1A guy as opposed to potentially a 1B, maybe is more what he is now. But I, you know, and that's probably what's going to come down to. I just think it's a very interesting argument. And you kind of nailed it. The whole point of my column was to say, hey, this is a perfect system right now.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the perfect system next year, it's totally different. But for now, it is. And because of that, it's worth the discussion in terms of whether this should be pursued further.
Well, and another really interesting angle on this is, I am curious, like, what the messaging would be. Like, let's say they're having, let's say Craig Conroy and Dan Vladar and his agent Dan Milstein, like, say these conversations begin. I think what also would be really interesting to me is where Vladar's head at, knowing that, look, Dustin's going to become more and more the priority going forward. Like, right now, you know, they've each started 19 games. Right now, I think they're separated by like seconds in terms of their overall ice time. Like, it's basically been as even a split as you're possibly going to find in the NHL. And that's great. It's worked. And I think that's as I've said, I think it's a really big reason why Dustin has had the success that he's had, is because they've been able to have another goalie like Vladar take some of the harder minutes, take those second half of the back-to-backs, and they feel comfortable putting him in there half the time to keep Dustin's energy levels where they feel they need to be. And I'm just looking right now. I believe they're separated by 22 seconds in terms of overall ice time. It has been,
it's amazing.
It truly is. Like, that is a perfect even split through 38 games this year. And so, but that's not going to remain the case, and that,
no,
I think would be that's what's interesting to me from a Vladar standpoint. Like, is he okay being relegated to a two, ideally? Like, if the Flames have it their way, and let's say they do decide to re-sign Vladar, and that means that maybe Devin Cooley's a guy that they aren't looking to go forward with, or, you know, Cooley looks to go elsewhere because he wants more NHL playing time, is Vladar okay with gradually being relegated to the two while ideally Dustin Wolf develops into this team's number one goalie? That I also wonder about that, and I can't sit here speaking for a guy like Vladar, but does he want to have the opportunity to fight for a number one job? I don't know if that is here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. He knows deep down in his heart. Like right now, I think he really believes every time he comes to the rink that he has a 50-50 chance at being the starter every day. But because of, you know, based on merit, they've both been really, really good. And you know, the role he's played is to be kind of the alpha male in the two. But he has to know in his heart of heart that those numbers are going to start to slide, like, right away here, like I said earlier, and especially next year and year after that. But again, there's something to be said with comfort. Like, we've seen so many guys who leave this market thinking the grass is always greener. And sometimes it is. I always point to Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett, some of these guys. But I also point to guys like Elias Lindholm and Johnny Gaudreau, where it didn't work out that well. Noah Hanifin, yeah, I'd say it probably has worked out pretty well. So, you know, goalies is different because it's all about, you know, opportunity. He has that here. It will be diminished. But what does that look like compared to 31 other markets in the city, or 31 markets in the league?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that his agent, I'm sure Dan Milstein will be telling him, look, we can get you so many better situations, but most importantly, we could probably get you an extra $2 million a year. Like, I really think that somewhere next year, like, I don't know about numbers. You know, again, I always say that's Ryan Pike's job, but like, is it a $3.5 million a year? Somewhere else. I mean, it all depends on opportunity and situation and injuries and movement at the trade deadline and movement at the draft. And, you know, before free agency hits on July 1st, so many things could change. But I think every agent will say, look, I'm betting on you getting more money on the open market than sticking with the team you're with right now. Like, every agent will say that, unless the guy is so over the moon happy with his situation. But to your point, by the time this season's over, I'm not sure Vladar will feel as good about his lot in life at the end of the season as he does right now, right? Like, because I think they're going to give the ball to Wolf a little bit more to run with it. We ran a graphic last night on our TV broadcast showing the starts. We kind of scrolled them up the screen.
Yep.
And it was like one start, one to one guy, one to the other guy. Like, the split has been absolutely unbelievably even. And then they both got a 3-game run. And then it went back to 2 games sometimes. And anyway, 19 and 19. I mean, we thought it would be a 50-50 split this year, but boy, I didn't think it would actually be almost to the second. It's been great. It's a great story. It's a great debate. And I think Conroy said it to me best. He goes, the more Vladar plays this season, the more we'll get an understanding of where he feels he belongs in the marketplace and where we feel we should be in the marketplace in terms of what he's worth. And, you know, if they can bridge that divide, then maybe they keep him. But I know the odds are stacked against it for sure.
Well, and here's another interesting part that I don't know if we can make a final decision as of yet either, because I'm with you. I do think as we move into the second half of the season, I don't think that it's like imminently, like it's going to start happening right away. We know Wolf's going to start against Nashville on Saturday. Ryan Huska confirmed that at practice Friday. But, you know, they've got a back-to-back coming up in California, and so you're probably going to see them split there. But I do think as we move into the second half of the season, they are going to, especially if it's Dustin, if he starts to put together a couple of good starts in, you know, even if it's not in a row, if he's got two or three really good starts in his most recent, then I do think they're going to give him a run of 6 starts in 8 or 7 starts in 10 or something like that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but if they do start giving a little more workload and they do start giving a little more responsibility to Wolf and it becomes a little less, even for a quarter of a season, a little bit less of a timeshare and a true timeshare, how does Dustin deal with it? And I think that gives us a really good idea too, because if he deals with it and there is no issue in the energy levels, you don't really have to worry about as much as you thought, and he continues to play at a very high level and maybe figures out his game on the road, well, then I think maybe it lessens the need to keep a guy like Vladar. But if it doesn't go that way and all of a sudden Wolf's game slips a little bit, you're like, you know what? Okay, that gives a little bit more evidence that having this other guy is really important, and maybe we're not willing to let that go the rest of this season, so maybe it trades off the table. Or maybe we're not willing to let that go by the wayside even next year, so maybe that ups the opportunity of a contract extension. I don't know if they would feel as comfortable with a timeshare with Wolf and Cooley, because Devin Cooley's NHL experience is so much less. So I still think there's a lot of this story to be written even before you make a final call on which way you want to go for the deadline or which way you want to go for next season.
Totally agree. And, you know, if Devin Cooley isn't the best goalie in the AHL right now, this is a different conversation we're having completely.
Yeah.
Completely different. If it's Ignatiev, who's the you know, third in line, I would write that column. I mean, I guess I'd write that column saying, look, they have to sign Vladar. But he's the reason why this is a discussion, because he's only 800,000. Look, cap space is irrelevant right now, let's be honest.
For them, for sure.
So that part doesn't factor into all this. You still don't want to overpay for Vladar, even if you do re-sign him, but that's not the issue. The issue is, you know, it's working right now. The other thing is, what if, I hate even saying this sort of stuff, but hey, it is pro sports. Like, what if Devin Cooley had a horrible season-ending injury right now? You know, that puts into question, you know, whether he's going to be ready for camp next year. Like, he is the reason why Vladar is somewhat expendable, but it comes with risk, and that's the whole point of this conversation, which is, how risky is it to have Devin Cooley as your insurance policy behind Dustin Wolf? Because we know that the insurance and the comfort that Vladar brings in various ways is significant, and it works. So anyway, so many things can change, and we could laugh at this conversation in 3 months from now. But the one thing I don't think will change, and listen, I'll say this, if someone had a big injury and decided that Dan Vladar was their guy to kind of replace or to help them, I don't think there's a question that the Calgary Flames, if they felt they could cash in on Dan Vladar, that would also make this decision very easy too. But I don't think that's going to happen. But if someone came knocking on our door and said, we'll give you a second rounder for Dan Vladar because Linus Ullmark just had a season-ending injury, I think they'd make that trade in a heartbeat. Do you?
Yeah. I think, and honestly, I think if they could, at the deadline, as we move closer to the deadline, and I think that they would like to keep this and to keep the tandem as an option if they're going to go down the trade route as long as humanly possible, because it has worked. But yeah, I think that if they could get a third round pick and recoup what they paid to bring Vladar into the organization in the summer of 2021, I think that they would probably be okay with getting the third rounder for him. I don't know if that is a super likely scenario, and the numbers are a big reason for it. Now, I also, I mean, you've got Jordan Sigalette, who runs this goaltending department in Calgary, and then you've got a number of other, you know, Sean Burke runs Vegas's goaltending department, and there's, you know, more and more goaltending is more than just a goalie coach. Like, they've really turned this into its own little silo, and I can tell you, the goalie people don't look at raw save percentage and goals against average and make their decisions on that. They've got their own internal metrics. They do their scouting. They've got some really interesting, like some of the goals saved above expected or below expected. Like, those are all things that these goalie departments take into account and really use as important deciding factors. So I think there's a whole lot more to what Vladar has done than just the goals against and save percentage, because you're right. You know, some of the circumstances, some of the way things have gone, some rotten luck have all played into lower numbers, and significantly lower numbers for Vladar than what Wolf's look like right now. But I don't know. I honestly don't know if a third round pick is reasonable or not, because it's so hard to gauge this goalie market.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Mackenzie Blackwood is a good example. Like, Colorado goes out and not only trades for him, gives up assets for him, but then signs him to a 5-year extension. Like, Mackenzie Blackwood's numbers are, they're not good. Like, you don't go, I mean, you know, he was on a bad team, and, you know, but they saw through all the numbers. But it is hard for a general manager, especially a general manager who may feel like he's a bit on the hot seat, to sell a trade where you're giving up assets and you're acquiring someone in exchange whose numbers are, quite frankly, subpar. And, you know, again, the eye test tells us all that Vladar has been very exemplary this year, but the numbers test has him in the bottom third of the NHL. And again, a GM looking for a guy goes, yeah, I'd like to bring in Vladar. I think he's good enough, but man, I'm going to take a beating. Everyone's going to go, why'd you trade for this guy?
Yeah,
3.3 goals against average. Well, it's because of who he plays on. And he also has played all the toughest games. Either way, it's a hard sell, but to your point, Mackenzie Backwood could cut through all that. And Colorado feels you put him on a good team and he could, you know, all those numbers would drastically improve. So I don't think a third rounder, I think it's reasonable, but I think it's a long shot to get him in return for Vladar. That's why I said, if someone said we're desperate, we will give you a second rounder, then it's a done deal. Like the trade's done yesterday. Third rounder, I think they'd probably do that pretty quickly too, because it is about asset management and the likelihood is he's gone for nothing in the summer anyway. So if you get anything for him, I think you'd do it.
Where are you on what we're seeing from Dustin Wolf? Because he has been electric at home, and what is it, 10-1-1 now, his record on home ice, and he's got a league best 937 when it comes to his home ice stats. Yet when you take a look at the swing, like how do you go from 937 on home ice to 872 on the road? And I know he hasn't started on the road as much as Vladar has, and Vladar's road numbers are superior to Wolf's numbers. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what we're seeing here with Dustin. We know that he is a good goalie. We know that he belongs in the NHL. I don't think there's any dispute on those things, but like, how do we explain away how different it's been at the Saddle Dome compared to anywhere else where it's like a 60-point swing in terms of his save percentage?
Yeah, it's impossible to put your finger on it. I know he can't. You know, there are people with it's because at home, you know, the sight line's better. He's familiar with the Dome because he's played here for 3 years with the Wranglers and the Flames. And, you know, I just think it all, a large part of it boils down to the fact that, hey, look, everybody's better at home. Everybody. It's just in all of sport. It's just the way it works. You have an inherent advantage when you play at home as opposed to playing on the road. It's hard for anyone to put their finger on it completely. You know, I was talking to Sarchi about this last night on the broadcast. He's like, you know, what about the theory that, you know, on the road you're more tired because you're traveling and you're not getting as much sleep because you're on the go? And he goes, are you kidding me? I slept like a baby on the road. I was always way more rested on the road because I don't have to drive my kids to school. I'm not picking up from school. I'm not, you know, I don't have chores to run. Either way, we all know there's home field advantage in every sport. But that does not, you know, account for a 10-1-1 record. It's amazing to watch. You know, maybe he's fueled by the support because he is as big a favorite as this city has right now. Like, he's got to be the most popular player on the team, was he not? Like, can you think of someone who's, you know, like someone put it to me the other day, like, you know, the Calgary Flames, they just don't have a superstar. And, you know, you look around the league and pretty much every team has that star where you can put on posters and everyone around the league at least knows who he is. And if he's not a superstar now, they know he's a superstar in the making.
Yeah.
Calgary Flames don't have that as a skater. Like, the closest would be, in my opinion, would be Connor Zary. But that's overlooking the fact that Dustin Wolf, to me, is a superstar in the making. I think he's already a star. And I think, you know, I've said this for the last couple of months. The talk of him being too small, that's done. Like, those conversations, those are over. He is a legitimate NHLer. Nobody can question that anymore. Anybody who does hasn't watched a single minute of him play. And the only question now is how high is the ceiling? And I think it's unlimited. I think he could be a superstar in this league. I really do. I think he could be the next Kiprusov in this market. And that is a guy who people would pay their money to see, which is all the more reason why every time they announce Vladar starts, especially at home, people lose their mind because a lot of people are paying to go see Dustin Wolf. And I get that.
Well, that's just – and I think that's a really important part maybe to close out the conversation. But, like the reason why, I think the biggest reason why we're seeing so much pushback and so much vitriol whenever it's announced that Vladar is starting, and again, especially at home, is because I think Flames fans have just absolutely fallen in love with who Wolf is and him as a goalie and what he represents for the future and all of that, the underdog story, so on and so forth. And I think that is maybe the biggest positive about the whole thing. And while I sometimes get a little confused about as far as I'll go, but sometimes I get a little confused as to why there's so much anger whenever it's not Dustin starting a game. And so, yeah, sometimes I scratch my head a little bit, but I think what brings me back is that, hey, it's because Flames fans really believe they've got something, and there's a lot of excitement around this player. And yeah, the Flames haven't had a goaltender to be excited about like this, well, since Jacob Markstrom got here, but they haven't really had a homegrown goaltender to get excited like this about in decades. And if you want to count Kiprusoff as kind of homegrown, I know he wasn't drafted here, but they brought him in as kind of a project, and he turned into the greatest goaltender in franchise history. Well, yeah, I think it's fair to say that there is more excitement about Wolf than there has been since Mika Kiprusoff. And that's no knock on Jacob Markstrom, who had an incredible year that one year and had a great 4 years as a member of the Flames. But just in terms of the excitement and the investment in a player, I think that's who Dustin Wolf is. And I think that's the biggest reason why you see so many people upset when he doesn't get the call, and when they feel like, hey, he had a great game, he should go again, let's start to roll with him. And I can you know, talk about how it's the tandem and they got to rest him and they got to manage his energy levels. I can talk about that until the cows come home. But, you know, if you're a fan, you just want to see your guy play. So I think that's the biggest positive, is that I really do think that a lot of Flames fans have found one of their guys, and finding one of their guys to buy jerseys of and to howl after big saves and to talk about friends with, like, that's a real positive.
Absolutely. And you know, unfortunately, that really works against Vladar on so many fronts, like on his contract front, but also just on a personal level. That the whole reason I decided to write about this, you know, I just wanted to get Vladar's take on, like, every time they announce you as the starter, like, actually at the Dome, the night of the game, like last night there was kind of a light applause when they announced the starter was Dan Vladar. You know what I mean? Like, that's hurtful. Like, the guy's been amazing this year. He's been great. Like, you know, I think he's been very good this year. I'll go that far. And, you know, it's kind of unfair that, you know, it's not his fault that there's another guy who's just so much more popular and so much more exciting and younger and gets everybody so revved up. I wanted to know if he, like, you hear that, don't you? Like, do you hear that every time you're announced as a starter, people are, like, mad? Like, and here you want to stay in this market? And he insists that he doesn't really hear it too much because he stays off social media and he doesn't read comments and all that. And I hope that's true. And it's the best policy. As you know, that's always been my policy. I think he's true to that, because if he read all the stuff out there, literally when you announce the starter every morning, like, if he read your thread, he wouldn't want to resign here, I don't think. So it's pretty interesting that he still wants to stay here, even though he's clearly not the favorite.
Well, and I don't think the goaltending conversation is going to go away anytime soon, and I think it's going to remain a hot-button topic until there's a little bit more clarity in terms of where this thing is going and what the Flames might be doing with Devin Cooley, what the Flames might be doing with Dan Vladar. It's going to be a fascinating one to watch as we move throughout the season, not even at the midway mark of this season as of yet. Okay, we are underway this hour. It's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca on Twitter at Eric Francis. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully your Friday, or whenever you're listening to this, is going along well. We're coming at you on this Friday from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Eric Francis Hour rolls on this Friday, January 3rd, with Eric Francis of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on Flames Talk. And you know, spent the first half or the good chunk of the first part of this hour talking about goaltending, and all really spawned from one of Eric's latest columns about Dan Vladar and his future with the Flames. Well, your latest column coming off the 5-3 loss against Utah on Thursday night, your latest column is on Nazem Kadri. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to write about Kadri after the loss to Utah on Thursday night.
Well, you know, anyone who watched the game last night or heard it on the radio was, you know, saw that there was a stanza there where he got clipped in the face off of a face-off. He was bleeding, and he was so mad about it that he went and ran Logan Cooley and got a penalty for it. I don't think he probably deserved the penalty. The puck was there at the same time, but the ref thought it was interference because the puck wasn't there. So not only did he get clipped in the face, then he gets a penalty. Then the guy who he hit to take the penalty gets a power play goal.
Yep.
He comes out of the box. He's pointing to the ref, the blood on the ice from his face, from the high stick that the ref missed. So he's been done wrong twice on that shift. His very next shift, he lines up against Liam O'Brien and gets in. You know, I thought it was a slew foot, and so did Kadri. That doesn't make guys very happy very often. And then he's jawing about it so much that he ends up getting a 10-minute misconduct, and so does O'Brien. But it's a bad trade-off for the Flames. He leaves the game at 2-2. Comes back and they're down 4-3 and the game's pretty much over. Like, I think, and what my column was basically, when the Flames acquired Nazem Kadri a couple years ago for $49 million, he came here with the reputation, you know, earned in Toronto and a little bit through Colorado, of a guy who was always playing on the edge and had to be reined in, and some days would go over the edge and quite frankly cost his team at key moments. We saw it in Toronto, I think three different playoffs, and it ultimately led to them trading him because they just couldn't deal with the risk of a fiery competitor who would cross the line from some time to time.
Yeah.
And I have to say, seeing him all riled up last night, and when he went down the tunnel after his 10-minute misconduct, he went and smashed a few things and he was clearly upset about it. And we haven't seen him in 2 years with that sort of fieriness. And it's not to say he doesn't play with emotion, but it's all been very reined in. And look, I think he's been very, very good for the Calgary Flames, better than I think a lot of people thought he would be for the Calgary Flames. And he's one of their most valuable players, if not their most valuable forward, especially considering he's a center at a position where they really need centers. And it just occurred to me, there was a night where he showed that fieriness that I think he's really done a good job suppressing over the years and using it for good as opposed to bad. You know, as I'm writing the column, I'm thinking about how many columns I read from Toronto columnists eviscerating this poor young kid who made some egregious mistakes on the ice that cost his team dearly against Boston in the playoffs. But now it's a totally different Nazem Kadri. He's more mature. I asked the coach about it after the game. He said, yeah, age has something to do with it for sure, but he still plays with a fieriness, but it's just it channeled in a different direction. And it is an interesting evolution to me because – and I do chalk it up to maturity 100%. This is a pretty smart guy. When we talk to him, he's very calculated, very intelligent in terms of his hockey knowledge and his approach and his, I don't know, just how measured he is. Remember last year when he started off, you know, horrifically, I think he had like 1 or 2 points in his first, I don't know, 12 or 15 games. He kept saying, no, guys, I'm playing well. It's going to come. And we all thought, oh, yeah, this is a guy who just doesn't even care anymore.
Yeah.
And turned out he was bang on. Like, he started piling in points after that, and he was right. He was just saying everybody pump the brakes, kind of like he said at the beginning of this year when everyone was asking about free agency and being traded and all this. He said, guys, everybody pump the brakes and let's just let us play for a while and see where this all shakes out. So anyway, it was more of a column just on how mature he is. Like, I guess I'll throw at you, are you surprised that he's the way he is, or did you think we would see more nights like last night where he kind of, you know, goes a little over the edge?
It's interesting because I think we had started to see this Nazem Kadri evolve in Colorado. Like, even the way that he reined in his emotions and didn't take the bait in Colorado's run, like, Tampa Bay tried to bait him in that Stanley Cup final. Remember that series against St. Louis and the Jordan Binnington stuff? And, you know, he kept his cool and kept it reined in. And even when some of the stuff that happened in that St. Louis series, and I think was fueled by the Blues, and I think they did a really poor job of allowing it to turn into what it turned into. But, I mean, he had to deal with some vile stuff. And he... I think some of what happened in Toronto, I feel like I have a very in-depth knowledge of Nas now because I read his book cover to cover. So now I feel like I was right there with him through a lot of this stuff. But like some of the stuff that he made mistakes on in Toronto and how that put him in the spotlight in a negative fashion. I think he was stung when the Maple Leafs traded him to Colorado. And so he goes there and he's learned these lessons. And now he's been traded from the only NHL team he's ever known. And I think that always has an effect on emotional guys. And I think that is kind of what started this evolution. And then he did such a good job of channeling some of that garbage that he had to deal with en route to winning the Stanley Cup in 2022. Channeled it really well, and it helped turn him into one of the most important players on that run to winning the whole thing. And I just think that has been a big part of the Nazem Kadri we've seen in Calgary. Because it's funny, I spoke with Jonathan Huberdeau after practice today, and we were talking about his relationship with Naz, and they've grown really tight on the ice. And I think that you've seen Nazem really grow into, and this year specifically, I think he knows that he needs to be emotional and he needs to still be authentically him and all that type of stuff, but he has to be smart about it because he's being looked to as one of the tone setters. And not only that, he's being looked to as one of the guys that is going to lead the way for a younger group. Like he's got more responsibility on him now than he ever has at any point in his career in terms of those types of things. So I think the words you use in writing the column, and it's a really good read over at sportsnet.ca and Nazem Kadri always draws clicks. I think he's really evolved as to who he is as a player and really evolved his approach in terms of how his emotions fuel him and translate on the ice.
Yeah, and he's taking that responsibility as a leader very seriously because you're right, it would be easy. Look, he's got his money, he's got his ring. I think there are a lot of people who thought because he had his ring and his money, he just didn't care anymore. But he's just so measured in his words, his demeanor, his on and off ice conduct. And I think that can be misconstrued as someone who doesn't care, but he clearly cares a great deal. Look, he's been so good this year and so consistent for this team on a team that really, without Kadri and Huberdeau on that first line, like we talk about how they can't score goals, but without those two, I don't even know where this team would be.
Yeah.
They certainly wouldn't be at a playoff run, you know. Like, if you were to rank the reasons why they're still in a playoff hunt, goaltending would be right up at the top. Those two guys might be number two on your list. But, you know, he's those were tough lessons he learned in Toronto and a tough spell. And, you know, the fact that him and Huberdeau have become good friends and now, you know, pretty good line mates, it's a very interesting tale because, you know, they've both gone through – some hellish times. You know, some people might say, oh, yeah, boo-hoo. They both made over, you know, whatever, $80, $100 million in the NHL. Yeah, of course, there's going to be some adversity with that. But they truly have had to really look in the mirror and ask themselves, you know, how they can continue to get better and fight through some tough times. And I just think it's a real testament to their character that they've both been able to kind of overcome some of the things they have. And I think it's admirable the way Kadri's conducted himself. And you're right. He did go through some hell in that St. Louis series and from the fans and, you know, the Blues and everything. It was pretty awful. So, yeah, and again, I still think, you know, going into the season, I still think there were a lot of people who thought that here's the guy who, if he hasn't already asked for a trade, he's going to ask for a trade or the Calgary Flames are going to start trying to shop him. I don't think that any of that's the case right now at all. And I'm not saying he's not reserving the right at some point to say, I can't do it anymore, or I don't want to do it anymore. But he showed no signs of it, and he certainly hasn't indicated that to the organization, as far as I know. And his play reflects that. He's all in. And that's all you could ever ask for a guy, especially when you pay him that sort of money.
Well, and I don't know if Nazem has the ability to get up and get on the ice without being all in. And so I think that that's a really important piece to have as this team tries to set a culture and build towards something down the road. Like I think having him in the fold and want to be a part of the solution, I that's a really important part of this. And I think I know because I've heard the same thing. You know, you talk about how people wondered whether or not he wanted to be here and wondered if this was a place that he truly wanted to remain. Well, you watch him on the ice and you watch whether it was the game against Utah and what you outlined so well in the column, or you go back to the game against Vancouver 3 minutes after Brock Besser ties it. You see him score that goal and his reaction. Does that look like a guy who's checked out? Does that look like a guy who's just cashing paychecks? Like, it doesn't to me. That looks like a guy who just scored a huge goal for the team that he is one of the principal leaders for, and he knew how big that was in a rival game against the Canucks, and I look at that and say that's the type of guy you want on the team. I know there are plenty of critics of Kadri out there. I'm not one of them. I think what he brings to this team and what he brings to the ice has, after maybe a stop and start first season, his last season and now into this season has been exactly as advertised, a primary driver offensively, a tone setter, a leader. And that's exactly what you're getting from him right now. And I've really enjoyed watching him grow into this. I've really enjoyed watching him grow into kind of who he's turned into as a member of the Flames.
And I think there's a misnomer out there from some people. It's pretty outdated, but who think that that's an untradeable contract. I got news for a lot of people. The number one thing that every team in this league is looking for right now is a quality center, a proven center. You know, he was a huge reason why Colorado was able to get over that hump and win that Stanley Cup as a second line center. And, you know, I get it. Some people question whether he could be a top line center because he'd never really been one. I think he's proving he can be one here in Calgary, but don't think for a second that he's not been traded because they can't get rid of the contract. He's turned that contract $7 million a year for a guy who's going to give you those sort of minutes and that sort of production and that sort of leadership and that sort of fieriness. I don't think there are many contenders in the league that wouldn't love to add Nazem Kadri and wouldn't hesitate to do it if they could fit him into their cap structure at the deadline. So if the Flames wanted to trade in and cash in that asset and they thought he's not really on board, we don't think he's a team player, we don't think he's bought in, or he's kind of hinted he doesn't want to be here, he'd be gone in a heartbeat because Conroy's always stuck to his mantra that I don't want anybody here who doesn't want to be here. So I think he wants to be here and he's proven it.
You can go check out that piece at sportsnet.ca. Eric Francis talking a little bit about Nazem Kadri. That piece with Dan Vladar and his future and the merits of potentially looking at a contract extension. That's also available for you at sportsnet.ca right now as we start to wrap things up on the Eric Francis Hour. And here's my favorite part of this edition of the Francis Hour on this first edition of 2025. I don't think anybody would have known, Francis, that you were doing this from the back seat or a front seat of a car on your way to Eastern Alberta. I don't think anybody would have picked up on that, yet you did. So to everybody in the vehicle, that is a job well done. And whatever you're driving in has got a very quiet ride.
I appreciate that. Yeah, Brooks, Alberta will never be the same for another minor hockey tournament. Go Warriors! Go Warriors!
I like that. I like that. Go Warriors. We'll do it again next week. We'll see you on Saturday. Thanks, Francis, as always. Hey.
Cheers, my man. Have a great weekend.
And that'll do it. That'll wrap us up on this hour of Flames Talk. That'll wrap us up on the Eric Francis Hour every Friday. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us for a full hour. You can get him on Twitter at Eric Francis. Always a pleasure to kick it around with EF on a Friday. As we start to wrap things up this hour, my name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with the security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.